welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster and Hardwood Paroxysm. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @redrock_bball, and this is another in the series of team preview podcasts, season preview podcasts, and today we're going to be covering the reigning champs, the Golden State Warriors. It's not just me doing this. I am joined by Red Rock Basketball stalwart podcaster Matt Smith. Matt, how are you going?
Pretty good, Josh. How are you?
Oh, it's good. It's good to have you back on. And how have you been keeping?
Been well. Planning for a couple more drafts. So I've got a dynasty, massive Red Rock Listener League dynasty draft in, what, about 3 weeks?
Is yeah, it? About this weekend it'll be 2 weeks' time that we'll be doing that, and that's going to be very, very interesting indeed when we've got the 400-player deep pool contract salaries auctions. It's going to be a monster draft. So everyone who's in that, hope you are ready for an interesting time. I think it'll be when players start flying off the board and salaries start going way higher than you anticipate or way less. And yeah, it's going to be worth watching, because I think at this stage, myself and Mark are going to be live streaming the auction. We're going to be talking about it. So Matt, you might want to tune into that and hear our strategies as we're doing it.
I will do that. That'll be. I'll just say, know what you're doing and. Yeah, either spoil it for you or go against you.
We could also just throw out information that's completely wrong and say we're looking at this guy and just bump price up that way. So just there was always the risk of subterfuge in there.
That's right. Well, I'm looking at Kevin Garnett early on, so I'll put that out there right now.
Thank you for letting us know that. That'll mean that I'll bump that price right up for you.
That's right.
All right, Matt. We're going to talk Golden State Warriors today. A team, obviously, that won the championship last season. A team that would have won a lot of players their fantasy championships, I would expect, because of the rise of a guy like Draymond Green, the real solid play of Clay, not even solid, fantastic play of Clay Thompson. The fact that people were able to get Steph Curry with pick 3 or 4 in their drafts, and he ended up being basically the number one player in fantasy as well, which would have helped a lot of people. But we'd look back to this season. I don't know if much is really changing with this team. How do you see it?
It's going to be pretty much the same. We've got four guys, well, 3.5 guys, I think, four that are going to be fantasy relevant in standard leagues, 10, 12-team leagues, same as last year, and then maybe a couple of bench guys for 14, 16, and then just streaming them through. So not much has changed in terms of personnel. Not much happened in the draft, and the guy they drafted is now injured, so it doesn't really matter anyway. So, I don't know. This could be a pretty short and sharp podcast.
It could. We'll cover all the guys. We'll talk about all we need to talk about, but a lot of it is pretty similar. But before we talk about their fantasy value, Matt, how do you see the Warriors? You know, you mentioned they didn't make many moves. We are going to talk about a couple of the moves they did make. Do you think they've kept themselves at the top of the totem pole? Are they still the number one team in basketball? Has the Spurs acquisition pushed them ahead? Do the Cavs overtake them? Do the Thunder, in full health, they become better than the Warriors? Or the Warriors still the top of the heap?
Well, this is going to be a really interesting season in real life and in fantasy. Last season, they were sort of a bit of the unknown. They were the hunter. This year, they're going to be the hunted. People are going to know what to expect. Teams are going to know what to expect. Can they guard Curry and Clay? That's the big question. So they're still going to be a top 2, top 3 team in the West. Whether they've got that depth now to go against the Spurs, the Clippers, who have added more pieces, a healthy Cleveland Cavaliers team, we'll wait and see. But they're still definitely going to be right around the mark, and you'd think playing in a Western Conference championship with everything going to plan.
I think you pretty much have to say they are the 1 or 2 seed out there. The Spurs, you know, we were like, okay, the Heat when LeBron joined, you know what, we saw the issues with incorporating new players together and new star players. We saw LeBron in Cleveland, the troubles that occurred early on, and LaMarcus Aldridge, we know the Spurs have got a system and all that sort of stuff, but the addition of a guy who is adamant that his role's not going to change and his shot attempts aren't going to change and his scoring's not going to change to that mix, there's got to be some sort of adjustment period. So I still think you have to put the Warriors at number one in the West, just because continuity is one of the key factors for teams, and they've got tremendous continuity. we talk about the guys that they added and lost. The only real guy that added, you alluded to it before with Kevin Looney, their draft pick, the 30th pick in the first round, which felt like a bit of a steal to me because I thought he was better than the 30th pick. But he's out for the next 4 to 6 months with a hip issue. He wasn't going to play a huge role this year, but there was a partial role there for him with the departure of David Lee. But he's gone. The only real guy that has been added to this roster is Jason Thompson. Now, he came across for his second trade of the offseason, went from the Kings to the Sixers in the infamous Nick Stauskas deal, and then went across from the Sixers over to the Warriors. And he must be very happy of leaving the Kings, going from a bad team to a horrible team, and then going to the best team. So things are looking pretty rosy for Jason Thompson. He slots into an okay role here. He takes on that first big man off the bench role, most likely. Is that how you'd say it? Does he overtake Maurice Spates, or is Spates still the first big man, or are they playing different roles? How do you see Thompson's arrival in Golden State?
Yeah, I think he's going to play some pretty good minutes. I'm not convinced about Andrew Bogut. Now, in November last season, he played 26 minutes a game, but after that, he didn't actually average more than 24 minutes per game in any month. So he was playing half a game a night.
Yep.
So we saw, yeah, David Lee was the old man out, and they filled that role with Maurice Spates and Festus Ezeli, throwing Jason Thompson to that mix now. So I think Jason Thompson can play that sort of David Lee role, if you like. And in terms of fantasy stats, we're hearing a lot about David Lee as a sleeper, and he's going to have increased role at Boston and put up some decent stats. Well, Jason Thompson actually might do something similar, like get your 12-6 if Bogut's sitting, and solid percentages. You're not going to get any defensive stats like David Lee, but I think I heard you the other night say David Lee's got an ADP of, what, 90, 100, 110,
too
whatever
high.
It was.
It's too high, whatever it is.
And Jason Thompson's not getting drafted in the top probably 160, 180. So he's going to be one of these guys who you'll be able to get in, stream them. We know the Warriors have got one of these teams who generally have a good schedule, play a lot of quality games throughout the season. And by that, I mean on the lesser nights when there's not as many games, although the NBA have spread them out more this season.
Thankfully.
But yes, Spates, Thompson, Festus Ezeli, they're all going to be around the mark, so we might just have to wait to see whether, one jumps out of the pack and really grabs that opportunity behind, say, an Andrew Bogut.
Yeah, so Thompson, he was pretty average in Sacramento. He had a massive game. He had a 20-20 game at one stage when DeMarcus Cousins was out. So if something happens to Andrew Bogut, he could start as the center. He started as Sacramento center at times last season. He could start as the center for Golden State, if something happened to go down with Bogut. They could also put Spates out there. It depends on how they want to run it. But I think he's a real quality addition to that team. As much as Jason Thompson's not a quality player, he's not a quality starting power forward in the NBA. But as a guy coming off the bench and playing 17 to 22 minutes, that sort of range, I think that he's really, really useful for this team. He's going to be a solid rebounder. He's a pretty good offensive rebounder. He's going to do what he does close to the basket, and that's fine. And you're right, there'll be times when you'll be able to use him for DFS games. You'll be able to use him and stream him in and go, I want a guy that's got a chance to give me 8 rebounds, and he'll be a guy that's sitting there that has a chance to get you 8 rebounds. There'll be guys sitting on your waiver wire who, if you need 10 rebounds, you go, this guy is not going to get me 10 rebounds. But you can look at Jason Thompson and go, there's a chance he gets me 10 rebounds. He could have 10 rebounds in 20 minutes, and it's not happening all the time, but he's got a chance. Does that make sense? That you know that you've got a 10% chance of him doing it, whereas the other guy out there has got a 2% chance of doing it. So that's where he holds a little bit of value in that sort of sense, I think. We talked about the guys they lost. Matt David Lee, he was pretty much a zero last season. Justin Holiday left as well, and he provided a bit of spark off the bench, but they've got plenty of guys who can cover the role that Justin Holiday did. Leandro Barbosa can do similar things to what he did. Brandon Rush maybe will play a little bit of a bigger role. I don't think the loss of Justin Holiday has a real impact on the Warriors, do you?
No, definitely not. And Sean Livingston's the other guy there who, one of those guys who can come and get sort of 4, 5, 6 assists per game if you need those stats off the waiver wire. But the other thing is, like, the Golden State Warriors blew so many teams out last season, and we saw Steph Curry play sort of 31, 32 minutes a game. They may not have that luxury again this season.
Yep.
So the starters might have to play more minutes, and it might mean your Livingstons, your Andre Iguodala, Jason Thompson, these guys, their streaming impact may not be as great as it was last season.
That's also true. All right, so additions, losses, not much really happened. We've alluded to this guy already. We're talking, what I'm doing on all these podcasts, Matt, if you haven't listened, is that we're looking at the draft choices. So the rookies from 2014 and 15. So from the last two drafts, the guys who are on this roster who we can sort of look at maybe for dynasty leagues. There's only one guy on this roster that's a rookie, and it's Kevin Looney, who, you know, is a power forward from UCLA, but is out for the first 4 to 6 months of the season. Do you like his dynasty potential?
Good question. If he is going to be a guy that you're targeting in a dynasty, he is a long-term pick, in my opinion. He's going to be sort of a 3 or 4 year guy. I don't see him being fantasy relevant in the next couple of seasons, especially on a team like the Golden State Warriors, who are still competing for a championship. It's not as if we're talking about a rebuilding team and they need to see what rookies they've got and go out there and give him 20, 25, 30 minutes a game. So if I'm in a dynasty league, he's not on my target list. Like one to keep an eye on over the next couple of seasons, but probably not for this season.
Like he probably will get drafted in our Red Rock Dynasty League, I would say. He'd probably go for a dollar. But let me put this scenario to you, Matt. Is it completely crazy to suggest that in 2 years' time he could be starting for this team over, say, an Andrew Bogut, who might be into a lesser role? Like, he could play alongside Draymond Green. Green can play undersized center. Looney's a sort of a different guy, can hit some outside shots as well. Could you see him morphing into that position? It's not happening this season. It's not happening probably next season, but it's not like the Warriors have got tremendous depth behind Andrew Bogut. Now, I do like Festus Ezeli, but there's a chance that Looney could morph into a starting caliber player. Jason Thompson's not going to be around forever either. I like that his ability in 2 to 3 seasons to be a guy that they get sort of a late draft pick, like they did with Draymond Green, and you know, train him up, get him to learn, sit on the bench for a bit, and take a big jump. Is that insanity?
No, not entirely. I do like your thinking there. And they've also got James Michael McAdoo as well, which
I like him a lot.
He had some moments at the end of last season, so they've got a couple of young kids coming through. As you said, Bogut, I think he's 31 years old. We know he's had some horrific injuries over his career. So, yeah, I like your thinking. In the next, probably end of next season, going into the third season, they need to see if these kids are going to be part of their long-term future, or whether they do need to restock those big man stocks.
He's, if you're looking in dynasty leagues and you've got an injured reserve spot, you throw a dollar on him, you pick him with the last pick, stash him on the IR, don't use him for the whole year, and then see what happens. We might, and I'm actually working on an article at the moment for Basketball Monster talking about second-year players and how big a jump they have in their rankings from rookie season to sophomore season. Now, he's probably going to have a very low ranking at the end of this season, probably somewhere in the 400s, but it's not crazy to think he could become a top 270 sort of guy next season if he gets 20 to 25 minutes. And we see guys have big jumps between their first and second season. Like Draymond Green went from 300s to 120. Rudy Gobert went from 360 to 40. Guys have significant jumps as they move from their first year to their second year, especially if there is any sort of injury in their first year. So he could take on a 22, 23-minute role next season. That's not completely crazy. It's a lot of stuff would have to break right, but it's not completely out of the realms of possibility, because I've just been researching these last four draft classes, or last five draft classes, and seeing just guys take significant jumps up the rankings just in their second season. Like, we think of Victor Oladipo as a guy who could crack the top 20 this year in his third season. In his rookie year, he was ranked 140th or something like that. Like, that's not good. And we would have said, Oladipo's not doing anything, he's struggling. And then he gets to be a guy that's about 50 or 60 last year, and he could become a top 20 or 30 guy this year. So guys can take big leaps. And it's one thing that I'm always big on, Matt, is don't overrate rookies, but don't underrate second-year guys. I think that's, people go, oh, these guys used to be new and shiny. They're rubbish now. Let's move on to the new lot of young guys, when the opposite should be the way to go, because those second-year guys are always increasing in what they're able to do as they get more familiar.
And the Warriors are going to have so much of their salary cap space tied up in Curry, Thompson, Green, possibly Barnes.
Yep.
So the chances are of bringing in a big-name free agent big, or even trading for one, are slim. So that's where, you know, they might be pushing through these rookies to see if they got and can fill that spot on a minimum salary.
It's definitely something that it's nowhere near a certainty or anything like that, but it's something that you've got to keep in mind when you're looking at doing things like dynasty drafts and starting things off, or even if you're in an existing dynasty and you're looking at your rookies, you know, as a second or third round rookie draft pick, Kevin Looney is interesting because I think he went probably 10 spots too late in the draft. I think that he shouldn't have gone after some of the guys. You know, like an example, Terry Rozier went inside the top 20. I would have preferred Looney over him. There's just a number of guys I thought should have gone. He should have gone ahead of, and I think getting him at pick 30 is going to be interesting, especially when they don't have any. When Bogut goes, there's no one really sitting there, so he's going to have an opportunity to prove himself in that way. Breakouts, Matt. A breakout candidate. Now, when I've spoken to all the other guys doing these shows, we talk about it, and I go, okay, who's a breakout guy? It's a guy who goes from being, you know, a good and average player into a great player, or a player who comes from being a nobody to becoming a relevant player, a contributor, much like we saw. Say, an example I'll give you is Dennis Schroeder last season in Atlanta. He was putrid. He was pitiful as a rookie. And then towards the end of the last season, he was outplaying Jeff Teague for big stretches of the season, became fantasy relevant for probably the last 6 weeks or 2 months of the year, seemingly out of nowhere. That's one way you can define a breakout. Who do you see on this team as being a breakout player?
The guy for me is Harrison Barnes. Yep. Now, I'm not saying this because this is a Warriors preview pod, but Harrison Barnes is also one of my favourite sort of sleeper and breakout type of guys across the whole league. Now, we look at his numbers from last year. Now, on the surface, there wasn't anything special there. 10 points, 5.5 rebounds, 1.1 threes. He did shoot 48% from the field. Now, I think he could sort of put up, say, 12 points, 6 rebounds with a steal and a 3 per game, a solid efficiency. And everyone loves that glue guy towards the end of the draft that they can bring in. And he doesn't hurt you anywhere like the Damari Carroll type from last season. So I think Harrison Barnes can do something similar. For me, it doesn't matter that he's the fourth option on offense. Damari Carroll was the fifth offensive option at the Hawks last season. Danny Green's been the fourth offensive option at the Spurs for the past 3 seasons, and it hasn't affected their fantasy values. So I'd much rather have the fourth option on a good team than the third option on the bad team. So I have no problems drafting Harrison Barnes and him being that fourth option there at the offense. And you spoke about the leap between the rookies and the second years. Harrison Barnes is coming into his fourth season. We often talk about third-year breakout, but fourth-year breakout is just as prevalent as well.
Yep.
And I'll just give you some names, Josh, of fourth-year guys from last season who improved. We're looking at guys like Enes Kanter, Brandon Knight, Clay Thompson, Markieff Morris, Kawhi Leonard, Nikola Vucevic, Monte Yunus, Mirotić, Reggie Jackson, and Jimmy Butler. So they all had either big breakout years like Jimmy Butler or really improved. So I'm expecting something similar from Harrison Barnes. He is also a restricted free agent, and I think a team might throw some big bucks at him at the end of the season.
I think that you're spot on, because I had the same guy listed as my breakout guy. Now, to me, Harrison Barnes is a better roto player than what he is a head-to-head guy for fantasy leagues. When I lined him up and looked what he did in my rankings last year, he ended the season 172 in head-to-head, but 119th in roto. He could easily become a top 100 guy in roto this season. So any pick outside the top 100, I'm really okay with it. His ADP currently on Yahoo, I had it up and I've completely lost where I put it, so I'll get to that in one sec. Where is it? Here we go. His ADP is currently sitting at 122, and I think that's probably pretty reasonable. There's a chance he doesn't become the 122 ranked player. He's worse than that. There's also a chance that he's better than that. And that's generally, now I don't know about you, Matt, when you think about rankings, the best way I think to sort of put rankings is if you say a number and you could get half the people to argue it should be higher and half the people to argue it should be lower, then you got it exactly right. And I think that sort of ADP there for Barnes, we go, yeah, I know, I can see a situation where he's not that good, where he just basically does what he did last season, or you can see a situation where he's better than that. That's probably about the right spot, and you take that risk when you get after pick 100. And I think there's a little bit there for him. I don't think Iguodala is going to be taking the starting job off him, even though Iguodala is still going to be playing a significant role. Harrison Barnes can also play the four. He can take some of those minutes, maybe that David Lee left if Jason Thompson doesn't work out, or if Bogut's out for extended stretches, Barnes can play the four as well. So I think there is a little bit to like about him, but I do prefer him in in roto leagues as opposed to head-to-head leagues, just because of the way his skill set sets up and his ability to contribute little bits in lots of different categories without really being dominant in any one area. What about a sleeper? Do you have Harrison Barnes as your sleeper player?
Yeah, same again. And the point you made there about him playing at the four is a good one, because we've heard a lot about teams going small again this season, so they can move Draymond Green to centre. Harrison Barnes can play the four if need be with Iguodala. They can sort of interchange between the three and the four, so it gives them some flexibility. Just checking that, I was hoping I drafted Harrison Barnes in our list in the league, and I did. I got him in round 12, so
yeah, that's about whatever. That's good.
140 or something, I can't think off the top of my head, but I'm pretty happy taking him there. And yeah, that's a head-to-head legs, but I've got no issue with that. So, yeah. No, consider Harrison Barnes the last two or three picks of your draft.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's worth it. And, you know, it might not work out. He might not do anything. He might be terrible for a lot of the season. You know, he might not be worth it. Like, it was most of last season where you didn't even bother rostering him. He wasn't good enough to do it. And that's fine. If that's how it is, that's how it is. But there is a chance that he does break out as he comes into his, you know, what essentially is a contract season for him. And I do like the ability of him to do that. And you got him at pick 134 in our draft, man. I'm just looking that up. He's got an average ADP across the 12 Red Rock Listener Leagues, which I'm pleased to say all finished drafting today, with the Lafonso Ellis division finally wrapping their draft up. So that's all finished. He had an average draft position of 144 across the 12 leagues. So I think that's about right. I think he was not drafted in two of the leagues, and everyone else he was between 114 and 151. So that's about the right range for him. Now a guy I've got as a sleeper. Now I'm 100% convinced myself that he is going to be a sleeper. But Andrew Bogut is an interesting guy. He's currently got an ADP of 124. But it depends on how you want to build your team. Now, you're right, Matt. He'll probably only play 24 minutes a night. But I've said this plenty of times that that's fine. But if he's going to get you 8 rebounds and he can get you almost 2 blocks and shoot 58% from the field and get you almost 3 assists, I don't care if he plays 24 minutes, because those numbers at pick 124 is more than worth it, in my opinion. I think that, you know, yeah, 6 points is crap. Yeah, 40% from the free throw line is terrible. But 58% from the field, 2 blocks, 3 assists, 8 rebounds. They're pretty good numbers for that point in the draft. You've got to be set up to absorb his free throw hit, even though he takes only 0.4 a game. So that's not a huge impact. It's going to be a slight negative impact, but you can easily deal with that. It's not like an Andre Drummond. It's not like a DeAndre Jordan. But he's a guy that at ADP of 124, if you take him around, then he could easily be a top 100 guy, based on the way that your team is set up. If you're going big and you want to really focus on your boards, get your field goal percentage up, get your rebounds, and get some assists from a center, there's not many better big man passers than Andrew Bogut. The risk is there, though. There's definitely a risk that he's injured, he doesn't play a lot, and he even goes less than 24 minutes. So that is a risk, but I think I'm okay with it. I'm okay with looking at him towards the end of a draft to really solidify those categories, which it's not necessarily the easiest to get, especially those bigger block numbers, where a lot of the last year to get block numbers, we could get them anywhere off the waiver wire. Pretty much guys were coming at it everywhere. You get John Henson, grab Rudy Gobert, grab Hassan Whiteside, Nerlens Noel, he was a waiver wire guy. Now all these guys are going inside the top 40, not Henson, but you know, all these guys who are waiver wire block guys are not available. It's going to be a little bit harder to get those late round block guys. Are there any late round block guys that you could see that are worth it, that sort of area of Bogut that you'd prefer over him?
A little bit earlier, guys like Jusuf Nurkić.
Yeah. Nurkić is above him.
Yeah, Robin Lopez. I'm talking sort of 20 or 40 spots higher, just off the top of my head. But when I draft for the long term. But if you're in a head-to-head league and looking for some short-term impact over the first sort of 4 or 5 weeks of the season, then Andrew Bogut is a really good guy, because his first month of the season will more than likely be his best, yep. Get you off to a good start, get those boards and blocks, as you said. And then, you know, come Christmas time, his minutes will decline, you'll get injured, he'll be resting. And then you just flick him to the curb and pick up a hot free agent. So not a bad guy if you're looking for a hot start.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So when you're drafting as well, is we had this discussion with you a while ago about a player. It was a guy in our listener league that I was going to draft. I was looking at drafting Justin Anderson from the Mavericks with my last pick because I don't think he's going to be a useful player for the whole season at all. I was going, you know what, I might get 3 weeks worth of goodness from him at the start of November while Wes Matthews and Chandler Parsons ease themselves back in from injury, and then I can move on from him. So in essence, you can use the last couple of picks of your draft as like the first 2 weeks waiver wire. Because you don't hold on to for the whole season. You don't necessarily want season long value. It might turn out that way, but if you see someone who's got a chance at an extended role at the start of the season, Mo Williams in Cleveland might be that guy as well. That's how you use those last couple of picks. And then by the time you get to December, everything's changed. So much has changed by that time that we can forget about draft position. We can forget about what we did with our last picks. It's going to be if you get that guy in the last pick, you're just using it as a waiver wire, so to speak. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Cool.
Do you want me to answer you? Is that a rhetorical question?
It was me just making sure, because sometimes I speak and I speak fast and I put a lot of words out there and I just want to make sure that everything I say is relatively coherent. Let's talk losers, Matt. Not you, but let's talk losers who are... let's talk guys who are overvalued heading into draft. So, who do you think is going to be picked higher than what they probably should?
Well, this one's really tough because we don't have much to work with. So the guy I'm going to say might be a little bit controversial, but let me try and explain myself and hopefully it'll make sense. So the guy that I'm saying is overvalued heading into drafts is Klay Thompson.
Okay.
The only reason I say that is because I've seen him go in a lot of drafts in sort of that 10 to 15 range at the back end of the first round, early second round.
Yeah, but inside the first round is too high for me, I think.
Yeah, in 10 and 12 team leagues. So Clay's going to give you elite three-pointers. That's unquestionable, no doubt about that. He's got good efficiency, but low volume of free throws. The three rebounds and the three assists are super hard to absorb that early in a draft, and you're going to have to make it up throughout the draft to catch back up. So he'd be a much better option for me at the end of the second round when you compare him with a top five player. So if you can draft an Anthony Davis, a Curry, a Harden, a Westbrook, a Durant, and pair him with Klay Thompson, if he's still available, that'd be awesome. For me, taking him, as I said, at 12 with a Camelo, a Jimmy Butler, who else is around there? Kyrie Irving, Damian Lillard. To me, that's too early. And it's only a matter of five or six spots, but it's just that team build aspect. And people say, oh, but he's got such a great efficiency from a shooting guard percentage. Well, if you want efficiency, Jeff Teague shot 46% from the center. 46% from the field last year with Clay, same as Clay. And Jeff Teague also shot 86% from the free throw line with greater volume, which was going to have more impact. So there's just an example of another guard who you can get probably 20 spots later, who in terms of efficiency is going to do a similar sort of thing. He's going to get you the assist, more steals. Obviously, the threes aren't there, the points aren't there, the blocks aren't there for sure. But if you're drafting Clay just for his efficiency alone, I think that's a little bit of a mistake. And if his efficiency drops off, obviously his value is going to drop. And that's a fairly generic thing to say because value is linked with anybody. But he shot 46% from the field last year, up from 44% the previous season. If that comes back to 44%, he may not be a top 20 player. He might be a top 25 or a top 30 player. So also, I don't see how much more he can improve. If he can get to 4 rebounds and 4 assists, that's great. Definitely take him in the top 15. But for me, like I said, I'm nitpicking here about 6 positions. But like I said, we've got limited players to work with.
I will agree and disagree at the same time. What I want to, I'm just going to have a look where he was drafted in the listener leagues. His ADP there was 15, which is basically on Yahoo, it's exactly the same. So congratulations to the Red Rock listeners who drafted before any ADP, before any rankings came out. They seem to have got that basically the same as everybody else. But I agree in terms of he's not a guy that I want to pick at pick 10, at pick 11, at pick 12. I think 15, 16 to 18 and 20, that sort of range, is probably the right spot for him. Now, I want to look at his numbers. Okay, you talk about the assists. If he gets three, assists, I'm actually okay with that. That's not a bad number. I know it's not seven, but you don't need seven. You don't need to average seven assists across your team to win. You need to get about 3.5 assists. If your team averages 4 assists, you're going to smash pretty much every team. That's basically the way it goes in terms of leagues and stats you need to average. So the 3 assists is not... 3 rebounds is nothing exciting, but the 3 assists is okay. He gets a steal a game, and he gets over half a block a game, which is something that's a little bit underrated with what he does. He got 0.8 blocks a game last year. That's very, very good for guards. Not many guards get anywhere near that. We know Danny Green did it, but Danny Green was revered for his shot blocking ability. He averaged, I think, 1.1 a game or something like that. Thompson at 0.8 is marginally behind it. So that's where a little bit of his sneaky value comes from. The fact that he hit 3 threes a game and got 22 points is obviously huge. And points are a category that are very top heavy. And if you don't get high point guys, there's only a couple of guys later on, Zach Randolph, DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Martin, who are high point guards, even Andrew Wiggins, but he's going to go, when we get to Minnesota, he's going to go 50 spots probably, or 70 spots higher than what he maybe should, depending on the way you want to look at it. I'm just not sold on Andrew Wiggins as a fantasy guy. But you're going to be able to get, it's very hard to get points later on, and that is something that does push his value up a little bit as well. The efficiency, he doesn't derive much of his value from efficiency. So if you're drafting Klay Thompson for efficiency reasons, I don't think that's the right way to do it. He doesn't derive that much value from it. I talked in the other episode with Mark on rotations. We're talking about Z scores and all that sort of stuff in terms of overall value, and it takes into consideration scarcity and compares it to player samples and all that sort of stuff. His field goal percentage Z score was -0.14, so it was less than average. So you're not getting... for a shooting guard, yes, but overall it's actually giving you a bit of a negative. And his free throws was only sitting at less than one standard score. So that's like one standard score, I think, is 67% of the population. There's a lot of guys who are providing more value than that. So his efficiency is good, but it's not amazing. His amazingness comes from his threes and scoring. And the threes, I agree, you can get later on. But the other thing you got to compare with him is you can get threes later on, but they hurt you in other areas. But he doesn't. He doesn't help, but he doesn't hurt in those areas. I think that's what I'm trying to get across.
Yeah, and I agree. Threes are the easiest category to find either at the end of the draft or on the waiver wire. So I'm always cautious about recommending going out of your way to draft guys who are three-point shooters early. Of course, you take your Steph Curry and your James Harden inside the top three, but there's no real reason just to get that three-point advantage that early in the draft, like I said, when it's going to put you so far behind the eight ball in terms of a few other categories. So I'm not saying don't draft him in the second round or out of the top 20 or anything outlandish like that, but just be aware of his, I was going to say deficiencies. They're not even deficiencies. They're just slightly below par numbers in a few areas.
I think what we need to look, what you said about threes is perfectly right. You get them, you get them at the end of drafts, but those guys hurt you. Jamal Crawford can get you 2 threes a game, but he kills your free field goal percentage. Like, he kills it. It just disappears. Lou Williams can get you 2 threes a game, but he might shoot 39% from the field. He might shoot 40% from the field. It hurts a lot. So when I say that Clay's impact and field goal percentage is still a negative standard score, it's a negative 0.1, whereas Lou Williams or Jamal Crawford might be a negative 1.6. So if you've built yourself up like a fairly solid field goal percentage across your team, and then you add those guys in because I want threes later on, then you get smashed in another category. That's where the benefit of Thompson comes in, is that he can give you a winning lead in points and threes without hurting those other categories. Whereas if you wait till later, you get a guy like Kevin Martin, who's a 1.7, 1.8 type of three guy who shoots 41%, and then see you later field goal percentage. It just takes a massive hit that you would have had to then build up through the other positions in your draft to draft a lot of high field goal percentage guys just to take on that, to absorb that hit. So that's part of where his value goes. It's not all pure just numbers. It's to do with balancing and that sort of stuff. So that makes it really interesting. In saying that, I probably won't draft him anywhere this year because he's probably going to go higher than what I'm willing to spend it on. I think I've got him ranked currently at 16 in head-to-head leagues. I think he'll probably go at 14 in most sort of things, most sort of formats, and I don't think I'll end up with him on my team. And this is something like, you know what, Matt, I'm going to diverge a bit from Golden State here for a second. I was thinking about rankings today and how weird they are that we, when we give guys numbers from 1 through 100, when in reality, once a draft starts, it means nothing. Because as soon as one guy goes out of order, then everything's thrown off. And then as soon as the next guy goes out of order, oh my God, there's a run on point guards, everything is out of whack and it means nothing in the end. Like, no one is ever going to draft a draft based perfectly on, oh, here's my list of top 10 guys. Yeah, let's make sure they all go in order, because, you know, the top three you can group together, the next four you can group together, the next six you can group together, the next 10, you know, there's groups of guys, and it's all to do with who's grouped in what area, rather than this guy got it ranked 50th and I've got this guy ranked at 52nd. In the end, it means nothing, because if you are desperate for a point guard and everyone's gone and there's only one guy, one good point guard left in the top 50, and you want to get him, you pick him at 39. Like, you just do it if you need to get that. Or you go, you know what, I'm going to wait and I'm going to go and get a point guard at pick 90, and that might be a guy who slides because everyone else has got enough. Whatever. Everything changes as soon as drafts happen, and nothing is more true of that than in an auction as well. So auction dollar values, once the first guy goes off the board, just rip it up. It pretty much means nothing.
I completely agree, and I've got 2 points on that. It doesn't matter, or I'll start again, your draft position, whether you've got the first pick or the 10th pick, that pretty much only decides your probably your first two or maybe first three picks. Like, after that, if I've got pick one or I've got pick 10, I'm probably still going to end up with the same maybe 6, 7, 8 guys on my roster because I want them. And going back to you touched on there about the run of point guards or whatever, that you've actually, you don't know this, but I've got a positional tiers article coming out tomorrow, and the first one's point guards. I'm bringing out one every week for the next 5 weeks, and that's for exactly that reason, because then if you're crossing off your point guards and the top 10 have gone, and you're like, I really need a point guard, then you are going to have to reach for that point guard who's ranked 11th or 12th in that tier. Or the reverse, as you mentioned, if the run of point guards is now, you might need to get one because, you know, later on you've got more bigs to choose from. So when I've explained a little bit of that in my positional tier article, which will hopefully be out in the next 24 hours, and that's how you use these positional tiers to help you in your draft. And preparing for a draft.
That was a good little divergence there. And where's that article going to be appearing, Matt? Just give it a plug.
Yeah, that's going to be on hashtag basketball over on Joey's site. So he'll tweet it out. I'll tweet it out as well. It's with him now. Hopefully he'll edit it overnight. I'm sorry it's so long. It's about 2,000 words and covers about 38 point guards. But you know, Josh, how much I love point guards. So I went a little bit overboard. But as I said, I'll have one for each position. Now, getting back to the Warriors with Clay Thompson, Dean Vasic on Twitter, who always hits us up with some good information and likes to have a debate with us, he brought up the good comparison between Clay Thompson and Bradley Beal. So in terms of points, Clay's got the advantage. Rebounds, assists are pretty close. Yep. Beal's got the slight steals advantage. Clay's got the threes advantage, plus the efficiency advantage. But for a similar sort of guy who you can get maybe 40 or 50 spots later, you know, Bradley Beal might be worth drafting at the six, or will be worth drafting in 55 or 60 rather than Clay Thompson at pick 12.
Beal's an interesting case this year, but again, you do have to weigh into it that you might get, you're going to get less threes, but you are going to take that field goal hit. So again, it depends on how you've built your team. If you've built your team, I'm going to be okay in field goal percentage, I'm sort of middle of the pack, maybe I can compete, maybe I can't, and then you add Beal to that mix, then you go down to the bottom, maybe 3 or 4 in field goal percentage, and that can be an impact to team. So again, it is so individual that when you draft, and that's why I love fantasy basketball and category-based fantasy basketball, is because everything is very different, and it's very much requires you to think on your feet and be able to adjust things, because it's not just like, this guy gives me 20 points, I'm going to get 20 points off him. It's very much trading off for value and that sort of thing. Also, good question, good start from Dean, and a big shout out to Dean. I actually met him last week. He bought me a beer at the footy, and it was good, Dean, that we the Bulldogs would get a big win over the Kangaroos. So I was very very happy about that. But thanks for the beer, and thanks for organising to meet up with me.
And Dean, any chance you can play a full team this week instead of resting all your blokes? But anyway, no one else is going to understand that. Sorry, that's a very joke. Quickly, Clay Thompson or Jimmy Butler in a vacuum, who would you take?
I'd probably take Jim, probably.
Who, sorry?
Jim Butler.
Yep, agree. Yep.
Yeah, but I'm not. I might do 10 drafts and I might take Butler in 7 of them and Thompson in 3. I'm not averse to having Clay Thompson. I just need to make sure it's at the right spot. If I'm picking at pick 12 in a 12-team league, I'm not taking him at the turn. But if I'm picking at pick 3 and he's still there on the way back round, I'm happy to grab Clay Thompson at that spot. And it really depends on, again, who I pick in that first pick as to how they want to mesh up. If I could get Curry and Clay and put them together, I'd have to get another 3-point shooter for the rest of the draft pretty much. I could almost rely on those two, maybe one other guy at the end, but I can almost rely on those two guys to carry me. So that's why it always depends on exactly what you're doing. Now, Matt,
can I just quickly say, I love that strategy of going, say, a Curry and a Clay, or a Wall and a Lillard, or a Wall and Kyrie Irving, or whatever it might be. And then you don't have to worry about that start or that position for maybe another 6 rounds. And yep. You can grab one round 8. So if you get a couple of point guards, there was a guy in one of the listener leagues went point guard.
I've with done his that first before. Yep. I've done that and before. It's interesting.
I love that strategy, but then he kind of ruined it in, I think, say, around 5 or 6. He went and got Ricky Rubio, which is just overkill in assists. Yep. So draft those 3 point guards, and then you're pretty much set in a 12-team league.
Yeah. We're going to talk a lot about strategy and that sort of stuff in some future podcasts. I want to get back to who I think is overvalued, and that's based on the ADP data we've got at the moment. And this one strikes me as insanity. Leandro Barbosa has an ADP of 123. Please don't look at Yahoo ADPs and go, I'm picking Leandro Barbosa with pick 123.
It's years ago when he was in Phoenix?
I don't know what it is. I don't know what the hell's going on. I looked at it. I was looking at the ADPs and I'm going, why is he at 123? It was just like this run of Warriors guys. This is the ADPs on Yahoo. 122 Harrison Barnes, 123 Leandro Barbosa, 124 Andrew Bogut, 125 Andre Iguodala. 4 guys in a row. I don't know what's happening. I don't know why he's at 123.
Someone's got to shuffle the cards.
He's outside the top 200 clearly to me. I don't really understand why he's there. Just don't look at those ADPs and go, oh, I better snatch up Barbosa. He could be in for a bigger role. Yeah, maybe, but geez, come on. What is he going to take Justin Holiday's minutes? It's just not going to be. Yeah, don't get into it. Don't think that Barbosa is going to become a standard league guy. Next minute, he wants him to be a top 100 player. All right, Matt,
Dean's watching live. He didn't take too kindly to my kangaroo joke. Sorry, Dean.
And remember, if you are listening to this on iTunes or on Stitcher or any podcast listener or anything like that, you can watch the show live on YouTube and you can interact with us as we record the show, whether it's myself and Matt or myself and whoever else is doing the podcast. And as always, I will tweet out the times that the podcast is going live. You can always chime in and challenge us on anything that we say during the show and get at us and interact in real time. Perfect situation, Matt, is a guy that I think is limited by their playing time. So a guy that is just striving for a bigger role and then in that situation would break out. So whether that be a trade to another team, a trade from a player away from the team, an injury to someone in front of them. Is there anyone that you see on this team, sort of giving forewarning to my answer to this, is there anybody you see on this team who is in that situation where they could break out given a bigger opportunity?
Not really. This is going to be another stupid answer depending on the circumstances, but the only guy could be Steph Curry because he played 33 minutes per game last season. If he was on the Rockets and got traded to James Harden and he was playing 36 or 37 minutes, imagine like his stats then. It would blow up. He'd be the number one player by even that bigger margin. So he's the only really guy I could come up with who could get extra playing time. And it might happen this season, like I said before, without those blowouts.
He could get to 34, 35 minutes, and then it's pretty much all over. I'll ask you a question, Matt. I'm going to be a little bit controversial in probably my ranks when they come out, but I think that Steph Curry is probably the number one head-to-head guy for this season in an eight category league.
And why would you say that, Joshua?
I just think that his ability to score, the 3-pointers that he can hit it's pretty much insanity. And we talk about Davis's ability to win blocks, but and I talked to Zed scores already. He could have a Zed score for threes in excess of 3.5. He's going to do it without hurting your field goal percentage. He's actually going to get that up there. He's going to really give you a boost in free throw percentage. He's going to get elite, like top 1% steals, top 1% in assist numbers, and big scoring numbers. He's going to give you not only positive contributions, but massive positive contributions in four categories, like huge positive contributions in four categories. Plus, he's going to be good in the field goal percentage as well. And he's going to be, you know, almost massive in free throw percentage. I just think that, look, Davis is right behind him, but if I'm in an eight category league where turnovers aren't a part of it, I would be okay, and not even okay, if I had pick one, I'd probably try and trade it for someone to get Davis so I could get the extra pick, see if I can move to pick two and pick Curry.
I can't really argue it. This is all about team building. This is for another time with the strategy, whether you want to start big or start small. And 99% of the time, I draft a point guard in the first round. I think if I had pick one, I still would lean Davis just for the block steals combination, the field goal percentage, and the free throw percentage. No other guy is hitting 50 and 80 plus and getting nearly three blocks a game on volume. The up-tempo offense with Gentry, he's bigger, he's stronger. I don't really care about the three-point shooting. That's neither here or there to me in terms of Anthony Davis and his value, but it is super close.
Now, you talk about Davis being 50 and 80. Steph Curry was 49 and 91 last year, so he's also helping there. Plus, then, instead of blocks, he gives you assists and threes, and they are. It's a preference thing. It's a personal preference thing, but if I look at the numbers and the way that the projections are coming out, then in an eight category league, I'm definitely okay with Curry being at number one. I think it's probably a bold call, and you'd probably be ridiculed by a lot of people. But in the end, between pick one and pick two, it doesn't matter. It is just personal preference as to which way you want to go into which way you want to set your team up. But I'm definitely be okay pulling the trigger. Not that I'm probably ever going to get pick one in any of my drafts. I've only ever had pick one once in any draft in any season. That was last season, and I took Kevin Durant before the injury, so that didn't work out too well for me. Only time I've ever had pick one.
Oh, have you got a sound effect there, or do you want to hang on? I'll get your tissue. Or?
You know what? If I had it prepared, I could have put up a sound effect. I do have sound effects here. Just got to find them. So let's just twiddle our thumbs while I bring it up, and then we can make that joke in retrospect.
It's also.
There you go. How's that?
And also about who you think you can get with the second and third pick. So if you're going Davis, then you might want a point guard, and you might want another point guard or a wing. If you're going Curry, then you probably want to go big. So it just depends who you can get with that second or third pick. And you know what? In 6 months' time, it's probably not going to matter.
No, that's true.
In all honesty.
Yeah,
your draft's not won in the first five rounds. They're won in the last five. So Davis or Curry, it's just team build. It's not going to matter.
Yeah, you can't win your draft in the first round. You can lose it, though, if you pick the wrong guy. If you pick a guy that and something happens, or if you take an unnecessary risk, which Davis and Curry is not an unnecessary risk, taking one over the other, you can lose it in those first couple of rounds. You can't win it there, really, though, unless you can't. You pretty much can't win it at that stage. You can't make a decision, yeah, this is going to win me. You just got to make sure you don't stuff up.
And we're going to have four guys who are so close in Davis, Curry, Harden, and Durant.
Yep. All right, let's talk about some other guys on this roster that we haven't talked about. That was a big discussion on Curry. What about Draymond Green? He's currently sitting at an ADP of 28. He was
28?
Yeah. Cool. Do you think that's too low?
That sounds a little bit late. I'd definitely consider him around anywhere between sort of 18 and 24, right at that turn of the second and third round.
Okay. I'm okay with it, actually. I think it's not a bad spot. I think that, you know what, in probably a head-to-head league, that's about the right spot for me to grab him. In a roto league, maybe I go a little bit higher. But I get a feeling that when I finally end up doing my rankings, he might actually end up a little bit lower than that 28 for head-to-head leagues. Currently, in the way they're going, and they're not completely done, he's currently sitting below that in head-to-head. Because I don't know. He's very well rounded. He's got a massive chance to be a triple one guy. The percentages do hurt him. Both percentages, they're not great. He's not elite in any one area. He gives you some good steals, really good rebounding numbers, and the triple one is very important. But I think 28's probably about right. I'd definitely be happy grabbing him at that spot. I think that's a good spot to grab him there, but I don't think that he's drastically underrated by being in that position.
Yeah, and he had that third-year breakout. It was just a matter of how far he can jump again in his fourth year. I don't know if you've done projections on him or...
Can he get better?
Well, that's the thing. He's the third option. I'd like to see what... So last year was 12-8, rounded up and 4 assists. I'd like to think he could almost go 14-10.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a little bit too high.
I don't think he can. I don't think he goes that high.
You don't?
No.
Because he's that type of player, or because he is that third option, and Clay and Curry do shoot so much.
Yeah, look, it'd need an injury to like Thompson to boost up what he's able to do in terms of his offensive input. Like it's just they didn't lose anyone. Like nothing's like maybe he gets better. I don't know if he gets better. I don't think that he necessarily gets a massive amount better. I think 14-10, it'd be a big stretch. I think what you might see from him is increasing his numbers in terms of like the triple one sort of stats, maybe getting to that. He had it last season. He could do that again, maybe get his threes up a bit. But I see him being quite similar to last year. I don't see him jumping up to become a top 15 sort of player.
He's really difficult to compare because he does so many different things. But let's say, for instance, like a him or a Serge Ibaka, which way would you lean?
It's completely dependent on what I want to do with my team. You can't answer that in a vacuum. I don't think it's who did I pick before him? If I picked Anthony Davis before him and I get Serge Ibaka in the third round, then blocks are done. I forget about blocks for the rest of the game. You've got two big men who shoot elite percentages, and then that's fine because Draymond. But then you can look the other way. Okay, Davis's percentages are nice. Can he absorb what Draymond did?
Yeah.
If I'm picking at pick 28 and they're both sitting on the board, I reckon I'd be happier with Ibaka, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah.
It's not too big a deal. It's not a big difference, but I'm not convinced he's going to get that much better. He could. I thought he was going to be a pretty good player last year, not to the level he was. I don't think anyone could have anticipated that. But I don't know how much better he gets from here.
No, I think anywhere between, like I said before, 18 and I'll extend it out to maybe 28. I think that's about, in terms of return on investment, he's pretty much going to break even. He's not going to, he's going to jump up to be that top 15 player. He's not going to fall out of the top 30. What you get is pretty much what you're going to pay for.
I think that's about right. Now, Dean actually did ask us a question. His name came up before we talked about him, but he did ask us a question. And he says, do you boys think that Festus Ezeli should get a contract extension? He is coming into the end of his rookie deal. What do you think?
So what's his increase? How much are we talking? Is he that sort of still that 4 or 5 mil range, or is he completely open slather?
I think he gets more than 4 or 5 million on the open market.
No, but he's not in that still that rookie, that sort of the third and 4 year rookie scale contract.
Yeah, he is. He was a first round draft choice.
Wasn't he? So how much are we talking then? I wouldn't pay him $10 million.
Well, you keep talking about Festus Ezeli. I'm going to bring up his current contract, and I'll tell you where we're sitting at with his deal.
There's not too much to talk about Festus Ezeli. Like he's a good fit, but it all depends what they're going to pay him because, like I said before, Harrison Barnes is out of contract.
Yep.
Steph Curry needs a pay increase in the next couple of years. So although the salary cap's increasing, how are they going to fit all these guys in?
Festus Ezeli is currently making $2 million this season. Do you think he's worth more than what Bismack Biyombo got?
What did he get? 12.
I knew you were going to ask me that. He got, I think it was about 12 over 3 years. I'm just going to bring that up as well.
Like for a backup big man, I've got no problem, say, paying 4 or 5 mil. I wouldn't pay him. I don't think I'd pay him 7 or 8.
Biyombo got $6 million over 2 years. Ezeli's going to get more than that. He's worth more than that. He's a better player than what Biyombo is. I really like Festus Ezeli. Biyombo's a good defender who does very much nothing on offense, like nothing. Ezeli's not a big contributor, but I think he can be a better contributor than what Biyombo is. I think that he is going to be a guy who has a real interesting role this year. I think he is. I talked about Kevin Looney becoming a starting centre. Kvetsa Zili could become the starting centre by as early as next season. And did, I wouldn't be surprised.
What did Aaron Baines get? Was he 3-20?
21 or 20, yep.
See, I'd rather give Festus Azili that over Aaron Baines.
Absolutely. I would be happy giving him up to less than 10 million, but 8 million, I'm happy with Azili. Three years, 8 million, I think would be a good deal. And if the Warriors could get that now, I think they do like him. Everything I've heard come out of there, that they do like him, and they can envisage him being a starting quality or a 20-minute a night guy in the next two seasons. He can impact fantasy if he gets those minutes. He can be a two-block guy, a 2.2 block guy, an eight-rebound sort of player, an eight-point sort of guy, which is not awesome, but it does help, and it can be something. And, yeah, I do think that they do lock him up at the start of the season, along with Harrison Barnes, try and get those deals done, because there's so much unknown in next offseason. We don't know how these contracts are going to go. The guys who have signed so far for early contracts have been, I would say that they've been cheap. Not the max guys, Davis and Lillard, because that doesn't count. Jonas Valanciunas and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist have both been bargains, in my opinion. I think they would try and lock these guys up and get them cheaper than the open market. Who else do we need to talk about? Is there anyone else on this team worth mentioning? The other guys on Andre Iguodala. Okay, Andre Iguodala is an interesting case. He's going to probably play the same sort of role off the bench, but that doesn't mean that he's completely out of fantasy calculations. He was 119th post All-Star last year. He was 90th in Roto League's post All-Star. I think that his current ADP is 125. I don't think that. I know that. And I think in a 12-team league, he's probably not a high upside guy, but if you've gone with a couple of high upside guys in the 10th round, the 11th round, and you want a solid guy towards the end, not a bad guy to go for, because you know you're going to get some okay assists, you're going to get some good rebounds, he can get some steals, he can hit a three. There's a little bit to like about Andre Iguodala, assuming it fits in with your team, or do you completely discount him from leagues, in standard leagues?
10-team leagues, no streaming option. 12-team leagues, he's borderline for me. Once again, probably I prefer to maybe go with someone a little bit more long-term, but that's just the way I draft. Definitely be a streamer for me, no doubt about that. But 14 teams, 16 teams, yes, wouldn't have an issue drafting him at all.
Yep, I think that's fair enough. And Sean Livingston's another one of those guys. He's more of a streaming sort of target. He could very easily get 20 minutes off the bench playing next to Steph Curry, behind Steph Curry. He was a key figure for them down the stretch last season. Again, he's not a high scoring guy, but he's a pretty good rebounder, can get some nice assists and good steal numbers. He's going to hit you literally zero threes, but he's going to be able to do it in other areas. So I think he's an interesting player for those deeper sort of formats, maybe a 14-team league. And I've mentioned this in other shows before, is that the deeper leagues that you get, you want to make sure that you're getting those, you're not taking the high-risk, high-reward guys at the same spot. So if you're saying, yeah, pick 130 in a 12-team league, I'm taking a guy that's risky. At a pick 130, you're not taking the same guy in a 14 or 16-team league. Then in that sort of format, I'm grabbing Andre Iguodala to pick 130 because I pretty much know what he's going to be. I'm not going to take a risk on a guy that we don't know what we're going to get from him, because that's almost a mid-round pick in a deeper league. So that's the difference in drafting between those sort of deeper and shallower formats. Matt, I don't think there's anyone else we need to talk about on this team. We've covered most of it. Let's get on to a couple of the last questions that we talk about on these podcasts. Who's your favorite player on this team?
Steph Curry.
How can it not be? It has to be Steph Curry. The season he put up last season was incredible. He was superb. I think I had him at number one going into last season. He ended the season as the number one player. He did everything he needed to do. He was the MVP. He won the title. He put up just crazy numbers, like ludicrous numbers. 3.5 threes, 24 points. He hit his threes at 44% on 8 attempts. And by the way, if you've got 3-point percentage in your league, Klay Thompson then becomes probably a first rounder. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, sure.
He shot 44% last season from three as well. Curry, incredible, and he's just super fun to watch. He can't do everything, but he can do quite a bit. And watching him with the ball, there's not many more guys that are as fun as him. Yeah, LeBron can score and do lots of things with passing. KD's the best scorer. I would argue that Curry, maybe Westbrook, is probably the most fun guy to watch. Would you have him up there in that sort of area?
Yeah, definitely. He's one of these guys that you're more surprised when he misses than when he gets it in.
Yep. And the last question, Matt, is who's your favourite all-time player for this team?
I'm going to go in terms of a fantasy outlook. I'm going to take you back to the 2004 to 2008 range when this guy played four seasons for the Warriors. Have you got any idea who I'm talking about?
2004 to 2000, Baron Davis?
Baron Davis, very nice.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Now, his final season was in 2007, 2008. For those who aren't familiar with Baron Davis here, in this season he averaged, this was his best season at the Warriors, he averaged 22 points, 4.7 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 2.3 steals, half a block, and 2.1 threes in 39 minutes. And he played in all 82 games, 3 triple-doubles in that season. Now, his efficiency was quite poor. I'll put it nicely and say that, but counting stats, he was like a Russell Westbrook with more threes and less of free throw percentage. But he was a guy that I owned sort of during that period. So yeah, Baron Davis, he was an awesome fantasy player.
Yeah, he was very good, and he's apparently attempting a comeback. He's going to be trying to get back into the league this year.
And I'll draft him in our dynasty league.
Yeah, he's so much long term potential for Baron Davis. The guy that I have is my favourite player from the Warriors, and I think probably a lot of people will be getting a theme when they hear me do all these podcasts and talk about my favourite players, and it does stem back to the early to mid-90s most of the time. It's Chris Mullin. He was awesome to watch. Not only did he have this one of the strangest haircuts going around, but he just looked not like an athlete at all. He didn't look like he should be out there, but watching him play was just, it was insanely fun. He had 5 consecutive top 10 fantasy finishes from 88 through to the 92-93 season. He scored in excess of 25 points for all 5 of those seasons. Didn't hit as many threes as what you'd probably think, but that's mainly to do with the way that the league was played in that time. He did have, I think, about 6 or 7 seasons during his career where he hit over 40% from 3. He rebounds, decent assist numbers, had a couple of seasons of over 5 assists. A great free throw guy as well. We're talking up in 89s, 88s, that sort of range for big stretches of his career as well. Chris Mullin was one of my favorite guys to watch. With that whole Warriors team back in the early 90s with Tim Hardaway and Tim Hardaway Sr., Mitch Richmond and Chris Mullin, run TMC was extremely entertaining to watch when we used to get it back here. Highlights of show games for half an hour a week on TV. That was, you didn't get to see a huge amount, but Chris Mullin was one of my favourite guys going back to the early 90s a long time ago. Man, I think we're done. I think we're Warriors. You said it was going to be a short show. It wasn't. We still went over an hour. We still had a lot to talk about, obviously.
We went off track there for about half an hour.
Yeah, it did. I apologise for that, but it was something that I thought, I apologise, but I don't, because I think there was a little bit of interesting information that you could have gleaned from that little bit of a diversion we had in the middle. Matt, let's give all your stuff one more plug. You've got these articles coming out. Where can everyone find you on Twitter? All that sort of stuff.
Yep, so find me on Twitter at SmanSports. Like I said, I'll have my positional tiers coming out over the next 5 weeks. First one's coming out in the next 24 hours over at #basketball. Joey will tweet that out. I'll tweet that out as well. So everyone sort of brings out their rankings, and it's the popular thing to do. I've had mine out in the past, but I thought it'd be something a little bit different. Give you guys the positional tiers. I may or may not do rankings come early October. If you guys want them, then I'll put them up somewhere. But yeah, so follow me on Twitter at SmanSports if you've got any fantasy basketball questions, and I'll be back soon, Josh, for the Bulls and or the Pelicans podcast.
Yes, I don't know when we're going to be doing those, but they will be coming up. A couple of things that I need to mention, going to be recording pretty soon after this one, a couple of hours after this, going to be doing the Philadelphia 76ers preview. That'll be released a little bit later on the podcast, probably 12 to 20 hours after you hear this one, so that won't be released straight away on a podcast, but we'll be doing it on YouTube pretty much straight away. Don't forget to check out the Hardwood Paroxysm Pod Center, which is just a new podcast center that's opened up on Hardwood Paroxysm, a home for all their podcasts over there. And of course, check out Basketball Monster. I do encourage you to go and check out that, because I am working there, because it is a great site as well. So go across and check out Basketball Monster. You can find me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. I said the Philadelphia preview is coming up. We've got the Thunder coming up after that. The Lakers, the Clippers, and the rest to be determined in terms of time frame when they're coming up. But they're the next four on board after this show. So keep an ear out for those ones. Matt, thank you for coming on once again. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Josh. See you, mate.
No worries. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.